Possible third canto, chapter.
DT, in the evening, text 21. Translation. O Queen of the Home, we're not able to act like you, nor could we repay you for what you've done. Even if we worked for our entire life, or even after death, to repay you is not possible, even for those who are admirers of personal qualities. Purport. So much glorification of a woman by her husband indicates that he's henpecked or talking lightly in joke. Kasyapa meant that householders living with wives enjoy the heavenly blessings of sense enjoyment and at the same time have no fear of going down to hell. The man in the renounced order of life has no wife and may be driven by sex desire to seek another woman or another's wife and thus go to hell. In other words, the so-called man of the renounced order who has left his house and wife goes to hell if he again desires sexual pleasure, knowingly or unknowingly. In that way, the householders are on the side of safety. Therefore, husbands, as a class, cannot repay their debts to women, either in this life or in the next. Even if they engage themselves in repaying the women throughout their whole lives, it's still not possible. Not all husbands are as able to appreciate the good qualities of their wives, but even though one is able to appreciate these qualities, it is still not possible to repay the debt to the wife. Such extraordinary praises by a husband for his wife are certainly in the mood of joking. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyanandana Salakya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Yes, well, leaving for a moment Srila Prabhupada's statement about the henpecked husband or the one who's talking lightly in joke and putting that on the shelf for a moment, I thought let's first look at the woman that is described here. Not just any wife, but a serious wife, obviously. A wife that is committed to her duties. Everyone in society has his prescribed duty. And if everyone acts according to prescribed duty, then the relationships become valuable. And then husband and wife will complement each other, support each other. And a wife, of course, is not serious about spiritual duties, then she can also pull a man down. So, just to put it sort of in a perspective, we're looking here at exemplary behavior from both from the lady's side and from the man's side. Who is strong? Fix you muscles. Fix. This high, here's my mouth. No. Somebody stronger.
Yes.
We're going to change it now. Jeebus. Okay, give it to me. I'm also on microphones. Take that thing away. It's just a disturbance. So marriage is. Gratification, then that marriage is not going to be
going to degrade both husband and wife, and that is the Grihamedi life, where everything centers around sense enjoyment. So in spiritual life, sense enjoyment is allowed within the Grihastha ashram, but all within the confines of Dharma. One can eat very nicely, and that is fine on a regular basis, but at the same time, it must be Krishna Prasadam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say, he was in the renounced order of life, and he would say, just give me a little rice and a little suck from the Mahaprasadam. Just a little rice and some spinach and all these opulent preparations, give them to the householders. Because Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Virabhasta Vegam, Etan Vegam, Yuvisaheta Dira, that tongue, belly, genitals are in one line, and we know that there is an effect. Devotees, they have to find a balance. It's not about as much sense gratification as possible. Of course, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained that one cannot always hold the reins of a horse tight. And when one is pulling those reins, one has to sometimes release the reins and let the horse run and give it some freedom. So this is speaking about the mind. We cannot always, push the mind into a very rigid mold of restriction. It has to come natural. Therefore, renunciation cannot be an artificial imposition. Renunciation has to come from having a higher taste. And then one loses interest in other things. Like, why bother with all these things? Just spend our time with Krishna. So therefore, the sannyasi should not... one should not take sannyas if one is not inspired about Krishna and about serving Krishna, and if one is not naturally turning away from sense gratification. Otherwise it's premature and risky, and one could easily fall down again, which is described here. So fall down is a big problem in spiritual life for all of us. And in the when the sannyasi falls down, it is like a big public thing with drums and firecrackers, and everyone is watching the whole thing, and it's all over the internet. Because sannyasi ra alpa chidran sarvaloka gaya. If there is a small spot on the reputation of a sannyasi, all people will talk about it. Whereas in the Grihastha ashram, fall down, there is another type of fall down. I call it the silent fall down. The silent fall down is like there's no announcements. It's not found on the internet, but it's found on the unhappy faces. That's where it's found. We can see. Because ultimately it is through purity that we'll experience some happiness, and in no other way. So everyone, Grihastha ashram, fine. But still, purity is the issue. That's what we are here for, to live a life of purity. And that cannot be overcome. I had one amongst my disciples, one couple, and they had a big double bed, So one time I was in their house and I saw the bed and sort of looked at it, right? And then the man said, don't worry, don't worry. You know, he said, yes, we may be sleeping in a big double bed, but Kadamba Kanana Swami is sleeping in between us. That was interesting. I never thought of it like that. yeah, what to say? So, what to do? But there is some truth to that, you know. Like when our spiritual master is there, yes, he will protect us. If we invest in that relationship, and if the relationship is meaningful to us, if there's a genuine relationship, then we would not want to disappoint our spiritual master, and that helps, that will give strength. Therefore, it's not just a formality. I have a spiritual master, he's a bona fide link in the Sampradaya. Right? Completely bona fide. Right? But, you know, I don't have any personal relationship with him. That's not recommended. The personal relationship is important because when it comes to the crux, when it comes to the time that we are tested, that can save us. There's a story of Giriraj Das Brahmachari at the time, who was in Bombay, then Bombay, and he was responsible for looking after the Juhu land affairs, and it was caught up in legal wrangling and so on, and Giriraj was the son of a lawyer, so it was his karma. You know, he was just naturally into legal matters, yeah? And he's still very good at it. Well, so somehow or other, that was his service. And he was so good at it that the opposing party, Mr. Nair, at one point made an arrangement to corrupt him. And one time when Giriraj went to some social function to meet many important citizens of Bombay, he got in the car to go home, and suddenly the door of the car opens up and this prostitute comes in. And, you know, she is like full on, you know what I mean? And she just sort of pushes her body into his, and he's sitting there, and his mind starts spinning, and he's thinking, I'm going to fall down. I'm finished. This is it. Right? And then he thought, no, but what will Prabhupada say when he will hear about it? He will be so disappointed. So that saved him, that affection for Srila Prabhupada, that deep respect. So that must be there as our saving grace, because everyone is going to have some difficulty sometimes. And it's not that it's always going to be easy. Everyone sometimes feels the pinch for regulative principles. Principle number 4. Steam coming out of the ears. Yes, the pressure of the senses is very strong. So, like this, we need transcendental knowledge, but we also need an affectionate relationship with the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. That will save us. We depend on this community. Alone, what can we do? If there is no friendship amongst the devotees, then we lose our motivation. And after some time we think like, it's so difficult and why would I do all these things? And, I mean, it boils down to that, to the human platform where we just, although it's not very philosophical, but where we really must desire to be with these people. You know what I mean? Otherwise, the philosophy tells you, you should, you know, do this for your life and so on. Yes, I know, I should, and I would if I could. That kind of situation comes about. Yeah. So, that is the difficulty. So,
as a community, we depend on each other, just as one depends on a good wife, and a good wife depends on a good husband, right? And they care for each other, and they really see that they are two halves of one unit, and as two halves of one unit, it really means that the needs of the whole family are our needs, not like I have my needs and you have yours. And you have too many needs. You know what I mean? And what about my needs? Nobody's taking care of my needs here, you know what I'm saying? Then you have a scenario which is basically heading for a fight. But when the needs of both are accepted, yes, these are our needs and we have to deal with this. That's a foundation for the Grihastha Ashram. The Grihastha Ashram is based on the mode of goodness. It cannot be based on the mode of passion. It must be based on the mode of goodness. We must... And how? How can we be in the mode of goodness when we are not in the mode of goodness, if you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I want to be in the mode of goodness, but I'm not really in the mode of goodness, if you know what I mean. I'm just, in the mode of passion. And what to do about it, you know what I mean? I like one statement of Srila Prabhupada where it's not about being in the mode of goodness, but where it is about associating with the mode of goodness. Prabhupada said, we should associate with the mode of goodness. Now that's practical, that's something you can do, you know, whereas being in the mode of goodness is impossible. I mean, you try. I get really passionate about it. Now, I really want to be in the mode of goodness, you know what I mean? I'm going to be in sattva good, I'm going to do it. How do you do it? Very difficult. So ultimately, but this solution to associate with the mode of goodness, that we can do. In this way we can strengthen our ashram by bringing in elements of the mode of goodness. Every ashram requires that. That is ashram life. The mode of goodness is needed in the ashram. Because where we are lacking in love for Krishna, all that we have is the mode of goodness. All that we have is the instruction of the scripture and taking shelter of that. So unless we are associating regularly with the mode of goodness, we will not be able to do it. We cannot suddenly when material desires hit, right, start to preach to ourselves, and now I have to be transcendental and, you know, and with the sword of knowledge, cut this knot of karma in the heart. But it hurts. Cutting. Who wants to cut? Yet anujasina yukta karma grintini bandhanati. Take a sword of knowledge and to cut. Ouch. You know, so who wants to cut himself? His own knot. Right? Oh no. Someone else's knot. No problem. No problem. You know, come here. You know. No. Jock. Merciless, but yourself, you know, a doctor cannot operate on himself, you know, who's gonna, like, he goes to another surgeon because, you know, it hurts when you cut yourself and you think about it, it's gonna hurt after, whereas you cut someone else, you just make a big cut and, you know, sew it back up. So in this way, we have to associate with the mode of goodness and bring that in our house. Therefore, regulated spiritual practices. The mode of goodness is based on regulation. The mode of passion is based on impulses. As it happens, as I feel, what's the weather like? Just a moment. And so on. How are you? But the mode of goodness is, no, I set some duties for myself and I will just take shelter of them. That's the mode of goodness. And so certain level, maybe not extreme, maybe not too austere, where we crack, but something we can maintain, that is needed. So in this way, we can strengthen our ashram. Because after all, that is Varna Ashram. Varna Ashram is a system where one gradually rises above the lower modes of material nature to the mode of goodness, and then from the mode of goodness we have a springboard to the transcendental platform. That's the idea. Because if you go to the transcendental from the mode of ignorance, then it's very hard to maintain. Then the tendency is to again go down to lower ways. So this is to be cultivated as part of strengthening the ashram. So that's what we're speaking about, really. Okay, in this verse, O queen of the home, Griheshwari. Then we're almost at King Puranjan, right? Where Puranjan meets this lady and he says, oh, my dear goddess of fortune, what happened to your lotus flower? Have you dropped it somewhere in the forest? Then Lakshmi Devi is carrying a lotus flower. Yeah. So, but the goddess, this goddess of fortune was not carrying one. Oh, so this is flattery. Flattery will not do. Flattery is simply there for exploitation. When we start flattering, we have a hidden agenda. And between men and women, it's quite clear what that hidden agenda is. Honesty is a foundation. Honesty is an important foundation of ashram life. One can only, if one is honest, become properly situated in an ashram. If it is based on pretense, based on show, based on impressing others, then we will fall prey to sense gratification when no one's watching. On the fast day, we will drink underwater. That story about, it was a Nirjal Ekadasi. And this one boy, he took his bath in the river, and when he was underwater, he was drinking water. No one saw, everyone saw, oh, he's so strict, he's doing the Nirjal. So how much are we doing for external recognition? When Srila Prabhupada first came to America, the people, they were impressed by him. Although it was difficult to understand him because of his heavy Bengali accent. But one person, immediately upon seeing Prabhupada for the first time, could see that this person is not trying to impress anybody. People could see. They could see it. He's not out to impress anybody. He's simply thoroughly honest. That is sadhu, to be thoroughly honest. So we must become more honest. We are not honest by our conditioning. It's not sort of taught in the world. It's not really appreciated in the modern world. Wherever in the world, honesty is far gone. That is a problem. But in spiritual life, we depend on honesty. If we are able to reveal our mind in confidence, guyam akita prichati, if we're able to do so, then we can get mercy from the Vaishnavas. We depend on the mercy of the Vaishnavas, but if we're not honest, then we cannot get the full mercy of the Vaishnavas, because we're hiding. How are you? Oh, great. And 3 days later, where is he gone? He just ran away. Why? Yeah, he wasn't honest. He was hiding his inner life. He had a double life, externally a show and internally something else. So this is a big issue in our private lives, which reflects in our ashrams. So ultimately honesty has to be there, and then pick up from there. And of course,
there is a minimum level of the regulative principles, and somehow or other we have to be there. And if we are not, that's not just, ah, well, what can you do? No, that's very serious. That's suicidal. That is like, you know, we are basically losing the opportunity. If we are not committed to the four regulative principles, take birth again. Come back in the material world, and good luck to you. Right? I mean, we must be serious about it. We must get out of here. The material world is heavy. Well, it's not so bad. Just wait a while. Right? Just wait a while until it hits. Right? Unexpected, it hits. No, but, you know, not everyone. Some people, they are, you know, suffering a lot, and others, not so much. But at the end, everyone suffers. And those who didn't suffer so much will suffer more at the end, because they're not accustomed to it. They don't know how to deal with it. So we have to understand is that we have to be thoroughly thoughtful. The mode of goodness is thoughtful. We cannot be on automatic pilot. I'm a devotee, and I'm chanting, and I'm just, you know, going to the temple. I'm doing everything. So what more is there to do? Now think. Think. Think about this philosophy and how it applies to our life. See it everywhere. See how it touches every aspect of our life. Only then. Bhagavatam, it's not like some sort of medicine, you know, like, oh gosh, I'm totally burned out. I'm just feeling not inspired. Quick, bring a Bhagavatam. Read it to him. Read, you know, Navayam Prabhavastastam. Ah, yes, I already feel better. Carry on. You know, next verse, you know, Atapi Kamam Etam Te Pratya. It's like, no, we have to deeply think about it and apply it to our life. And the more we see how every aspect of our life is in the perspective of the message of the Bhagavatam, the more we begin to appreciate it, the more we actually realize that here I have a shelter. I have this transcendental knowledge. It always tells me what to do. And in every situation, there is a way out. So in so many situations, you get caught. You get caught in a situation and think like, you know, what do I do now? You know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Catch 22. Go left, it's misery. Go right, it's misery. What do I do now? But the Bhagavatam is always a way out. So that is very important, that we are living with that knowledge and apply it. So the mode of goodness is thoughtful. We have to think. And we're not used to that. And in modern times, even less. We can't Google it, we have to actually think. You can't. You have to actually think about it. What does it mean for me? How does it apply to my life? What we're reading here today, what does this mean? My lecture is basically doing that. Right? I'm basically thinking for you. Right now I'm thinking about this verse. What does it mean? What does it mean for us? See, you can read the Bhagavatam and you can just nicely read it and say, okay, we're reading about Kasyapa, interested, sage, Kasyapa, interesting personality, very powerful sage actually. And Diti, okay, Diti had some issues, but not an ordinary lady at the same time. You know what I mean? Kasyapa and Diti, powerful personalities at the beginning of the universal creation. How interested these Puranas, this ancient history. Nice stories, really. It's not stories, it's not bedtime stories. You know, mommy, please tell me a story. No, it's not that. Of course the Bhagavatam has stories, but it's more than that. It's about life. It's about what you see. It's about everything that you see in everyday life. That's the Bhagavatam. See, more than a story. It's real. It's real. So Bhagavatam is in this way very important. Without it, how are we going to be in the mode of goodness? Without knowledge, we're never going to be in the mode of goodness. Associating with the mode of goodness means associating with transcendental knowledge. That's what it means. So turn on the tapes, turn on the lectures, you know, open the books, read them, yeah, somehow or other. And plan. A spiritual life without a plan doesn't function. How can you chant 16 rounds if you don't have a plan? Right? If you don't sort of plan, well, I'm going to get up at this and this time, and then I'm going to chant. And when are you going to ask, you know, if you just wait for it to happen, then sometimes it just doesn't happen. And geez, it didn't happen in some or other today. I just didn't have any time. Such a busy day, because we didn't plan it. There was no time planned in for spiritual practices. It's like my recommendation is rounds chanted before Mongol Artic, they're the most ecstatic. Rounds chanted after Mongol Artic, before Darshan, they're good rounds. Rounds chanted after that, all right, they're okay, at least before dark, right? And rounds after dark, they are rounds you have to chant. They're painful rounds. Yeah, very intense rounds. So that's not the mode of goodness, to chant painful rounds every day. Right? Every day I suffer because I got to finish these rounds somehow or other. I'm so tired. And I still have to finish my rounds every day. Oh, that doesn't help. Yeah, that doesn't help to kind of bring some happiness into our spiritual life. Happiness in spiritual life, therefore, requires a plan. The mode of goodness means a plan. How to reserve time for spiritual things, simply. How to reserve time for hearing and chanting. That is needed. In that way, we can associate with the mode of goodness. And then our ashrams will flourish. And then spiritual life will become very possible. Like that. So that is really what I would like to draw from this, this verse. So that the theme of strengthening our ashram, whatever it may be. So then, are there any questions or comments? When Arjuna was in a state of mind, what was Krishna's response? Krishna's response was to show the bigger picture. He was speaking about eternity, the eternal position, and so on. Instead of getting caught up in the small situations that we are in, we have to look at them from a relative perspective. So, Bhagavad Gita does that. It makes us see eternity. And we have to never forget eternity, the bigger picture. So, to remind ourselves constantly of the bigger picture. It's all good and well that I don't like regulation, but what does it do for the bigger picture? Antakala chamam meva svaram mukto akalevram. Otherwise, you'll be sorry at the time of death. Right? Then you think, oh, if only I would have been more serious and would have controlled my mind. Now I'm in this position. And now it's so difficult.
So that's not good. Therefore, the regulation is needed. So the bigger picture, remind ourselves again and again of the bigger picture, so that we can see these smaller experiences of liking and not liking as not so important. And then at least, like I said, you cannot always hold the horse tight. So you give some space to the horse also. But for some time at least, pull the reins every day. Preferably japa time, now it's serious, you know. Now just focus on that, put everything else aside, just do that. Switch off mind. Now, switch off phone. Switch off everything. Just focus now. Don't do this. And whether it's in the morning or in the afternoon, in the designated time, but if you have a designated time, use it for chanting. Tired, go and walk. Like that. It's not just a battle with the mind. We have to see the bigger picture. Are we going to let the mind pull us down into another birth? That's foolish. Are we going to miss the boat? That's really like a terrible thing. Once I was on an island in Greece, and on the side of Turkey, and then there was some tension between the two countries, and I stayed in this house, and I come out of the house in the morning, and suddenly there's a soldier, and he puts a bayonet on my stomach. So I stop. And then he says, "Mines." The whole beach was full of mines overnight. So there was you had to climb up a rock to get to the top where the village was. So I walked a staircase up the rock. Thousands of soldiers, tanks and everything all dug in. Overnight, the army had dug in. So, you know, it was time to get out of there, war zone, you know. So there was no vehicles, nothing. So anyway, we negotiated with the army, and in the end, they agreed to let us go on foot, 25 kilometers over a mountain, but we were ready to go to the main port. Then I came to the main port. There were thousands of stranded tourists. And there was one boat, and there was also an office of the shipping line. But everyone said, it's not sure if the boat is going to go. So I don't know, people were hesitating to buy a ticket. I wasn't. I said, this boat is going to go. It's owned by a very rich man. And, you know, this man doesn't like to keep his ship here. This man can get all these passengers out of here. He's going to call everybody he can to get that boat out of here. This boat is going to go. I buy the ticket. I bought a ticket. So then the boat went, and I was on the boat, and all these stranded passengers stood there on the shore, and I was waving at them. And in the same way, you know, when the day comes to go to the spiritual world, we'll be waving. The mind, you know, I know, it's the mind, yeah. It's so difficult to regulate the mind. Don't like it in Kali Yuga. Okay. Goodbye. See you later. So that we have to remember the bigger picture and remind ourselves again and again of the bigger picture. That will give us the motivation to control the mind. But in an intelligent way, like I said. Pull the reins for a while, then also allow some freedom. But chant, and then, okay, then you can have a plate of pakoras, or dosa, or whatever you want. But first chant, pizza, whatever it is. Different folks, different strokes. Nima, my servant, likes pizza. But no one is taking care of him. He's starving. Poor me. Yeah. So something we must give the mind.
things it wants. But at the time of spiritual practices, no. Shut up, mind. Now you're going to listen to what we say. We get serious now. This is serious. You know, the siren. The siren is coming down the road. To the side. Quick, quick, quick. It's a matter of life and death. It's the cutting edge. It's the cutting edge. Oh, it gets serious now. This is not the cutting edge. If you die, you'll be unconscious for 7 months, and then again in the womb, and again another birth, and drag on and drag on. It can go on for many, many lifetimes. So death itself is not the issue. The cutting edge is not life and death. The cutting edge is devotional service. The cutting edge is the opportunity to go back to Godhead. Now it gets real. You'd have a siren at Japa time, you know, everything aside. Everybody pull over aside, we're chanting Japa here. It's the cutting edge, you know what I mean? Priority over everything. That we should keep in mind. Anyone? She wants a reply, right of reply.
Based on what you said.
But, you
know. Thank you for really enlightening her. I was also inquiring, you were talking about giving the horses a little bit of rain.
Yeah, wow.
So again, you know, how do we judge what is that little?
The rain, you can give a lot of rain, but it cannot be sinful. That's where the limit is. So we limit ourselves to what is authorized. Read the label. You can eat it if the label is okay. Read the label. And if the E numbers are not right, even if it looks good, no, cannot. But if the E numbers are okay, then you can have the ice cream. No problem. Yeah, it's fine. As long as we chant Hare Krishna. So that's where we give the mind some space. You know. That's fine. These things are all right. But within the boundaries of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I speak sometimes about the culture of Krishna consciousness. And this week, earlier on, I mentioned that things like Bharatanatyam, you know. Now, me and Bharatanatyam, it's sort of lost. I'm sort of lost for Bharatanatyam because, you know. I get indigestion when I hear it, you know. But honestly speaking, what to do? I'm from a different culture, right? I mean, I have no appreciation for the musical side of it, to be very honest. But I do have appreciation that this is part of our culture and that the ladies are dancing like that because it gives space, you know. It allows some room for the horse, you know what I mean, to sort of gallop a bit, you know, and do a few dancing steps while it's going. So that's needed. We need culture. If we are just like, you know, nothing is allowed, and it's like very dry, so then it's hard. So it's all right to have Krishna-conscious culture and Krishna-conscious art and all these things to satisfy the mind. So we need that, so that we don't start to feel it's too narrow. But we have to stay within the boundaries of the four regulative principles. What to do? Anyone else?
How do we deal with the mind when it gets desperate? You feel down, you think you're not being very productive, you're missing your milestones.
Depressed.
And depressed. And then you feel not moving anywhere.
Oh, gosh.
Happy to practice with the mind.
Yeah. Yeah, what you're doing now, give up spiritual life. That's a great solution. That will do it. That will do it. Just give up spiritual life and be an ordinary karmi, and you'll be happy, for sure. You think so? No, you don't think so. Why not?
Been there, done that, doesn't work out.
Been there, done that, doesn't work out. Yeah, so someone said that spiritual life may be difficult, but material life is impossible. So at that time, you remember that one. That's a good one. Material life is just impossible. So spiritual life, okay, it's difficult. Granted. But together, I said it's easier. In friendship, it's easier. With devotees, together, it's easier. Yeah. And if we take shelter of the devotees and ask the senior devotees, it's like, I'm going through all these things. And then a senior devotee may say, yeah, that happens sometimes. But anyway, you know, have some milk sweets and, you know, and just, you know, come to the temple a bit more regularly and, you know, and it will pick up. Right? Once you come for the rest of the week, every day to the temple. And things like that. So, just a little friendship is what we need at that time. When you're down and out, a little help from our friends. So we need, especially with senior devotees, we need to make friends. So we've got to be nice to them. Then they'll be nice to us. So that's the thing. Be nice to all the devotees, and the devotees will be nice to you. That will give us the strength and shelter. Okay, I am. This 1 hour, I think, is the straw that broke the camel's back. You know, I already had 8 hours time difference. Now it's 9. Ow! So I take a little break, and you know, get ready to go to the farm. A bit later. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.